Today is Wednesday, November the 10th, 2021. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Beware! If a particular promotion on the internet seems too good to be true, it probably isn't. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, that's the Progressive Radio Network, streaming on the internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm on the internet. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. The United States announces arrest of our evil ransomware hacker and seeks extradition. The Justice Department announced Monday that a number of prominent ransomware hackers had been arrested. As a global crackdown on ransomware gangs continues, the Justice Department announced Monday the arrest of a hacker with alleged ties to the Our Evil group, as well as a seizure of some $6.1 million in ransom payments. During a press conference, justice officials announced details of the arrest of Yaroslav Vasilinsky-Yi, a 22-year-old Ukrainian national who is alleged to be connected to Our Evil and was recently taken into custody as a result of an international law enforcement operation. Our Evil, which emerged in 2019, has been responsible for a number of attacks on prominent U.S. businesses and entities, according to court documents unsealed on Monday. Vasilinsky-Yi helped carry out a large attack on global IT provider Kaseya this past July, the likes of which affected hundreds of businesses throughout the world. Vasilinsky-Yi recently traveled from Ukraine and entered Poland, where he was arrested. Officials said Monday, American officials have now requested that he be extradited to the United States, and a foreign indictment connected to Vasilinsky-Yi was also unsealed on Monday. Justice officials also announced charges against Yevgeny Polyanin, a 28-year-old Russian national who is accused of conducting Our Evil ransomware attacks against multiple victims, including a prominent attack in Texas in 2019. Officials said that the $6.1 million in cryptocurrencies that had currently been confiscated were ransom payments made to Polyanin as a result of his use of malware on various victims. Polyanin is still at large. Both Vasilinsky-Yi and Polyanin now faces charges of conspiracy to commit fraud and related activity in connection with computers, substantive accounts of damage to protected computers, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. If convicted, they could each respectively see lifelong prison terms. News of charges against the two men signal a broader crackdown on the ransomware underworld by international authorities. Department of Justice's press conference was accompanied by an announcement Monday from Europol, which said that a total of 7 different ransomware suspects had recently been arrested, including 5 reputed to be members of Our Evil. The State Department also recently announced a $15 million reward for anyone who can provide information leading to the arrest of additional Our Evil members. Merrick Garland, the U.S. Attorney General, spoke during Monday's press conference, noting that ransomware was a threat to a multitude of U.S. interests. These attacks have targeted our critical infrastructure, law enforcement agencies, hospitals, schools, municipalities, and businesses of all sizes, said Garland. Together with our partners, the Justice Department is sparing no resource to identify and bring to justice anyone, anywhere, who targets the United States with a ransomware attack. Garland described Vasilinsky-Yi as an alleged perpetrator of a significant wide-reaching attack. It's unclear why Vasilinsky-Yi traveled to Poland. When queried on the issue at Monday's press conference, FBI Director Christopher Wray said merely, "People travel for lots of reasons," adding, "But boy, are we glad that he did. Ukraine does not have an extradition policy with the United States. The Kaseya attack, which occurred over the 4th of July weekend, was one of the largest of its kind in recent memory. R-Evil's malware was used to infect Kaseya's software, which subsequently infected the company's customer base. A total of some 1,500 businesses were ultimately affected by the attack. Our message to ransomware criminals is clear. If you target victims here, we will target you, said Deputy Attorney General Lisa A. Monaco at Monday's press conference. The R-Evil ransomware group attacks companies and critical infrastructures around the world, and today's announcement showed how we will fight back. Who is VIA Technologies? VIA, that's V-I-A, had been a manufacturer of the x86 CPU, but their position had been almost entirely squeezed out of the market due to the dominance of AMD and Intel. However, VIA still holds the relevant licenses required to get a functioning modern CPU into the market and are getting back into the game through their co-owned semiconductor manufacturer, Chosen. But this was just announced. Intel is paying VIA $125 million for Centaur, that's C-E-N-T-A-U-R, employees. Just what happened? In what appears to be a mysterious and unusual deal, Intel has agreed to pay VIA Technologies $125 million to hire some employees from one of its subsidiaries. The subsidiary itself isn't being sold, however, and further details are scarce at this time. Taiwan company VIA Technologies sent out a press release this week briefly discussing the deal with Intel. All it says is that Intel will be able to recruit some employees of VIA's x86 subsidiary, Centaur Technology, while paying VIA $125 million. Intel won't actually buy Centaur wholesale, and VIA will keep Centaur's business. Centaur's website has been mostly wiped clean and currently just consists of a message telling visitors it's under construction. Intel confirmed the deal, but gave no further details following VIA's announcement, and Centaur still hasn't commented. According to the Taiwan news site, United Daily News further confirmed that Intel isn't getting the actual Centaur company, so other than some expertise, it's a bit unclear what exactly Intel is paying for. VIA may be keeping ownership of Centaur along with its designs and patents, but the apparent reboot of Centaur's website signals some kind of significant change. No date on when the deal will close has been given. VIA's press conference mentions that there are certain conditions in its contract with Intel, but doesn't go into what those conditions are. It only says Intel will pay the full $125 million when the deal closes. Centaur has been with VIA since 1999. In 2019, Centaur revealed a class of server processors considered to be competitive with Intel's Skylake processors and AMD's first-generation Zen CPUs. Well, this is not a merger. It is not a company takeover. Intel is paying $125 million to poach or steal some of the employees from VIA Technologies. Well, I guess we'll have to find out what this total deal really is. Yahoo pulls out of China for good. Yahoo has shut down access to its services in China, becoming the latest American tech company to exit the country. It pulled the plug in recognition of the increasingly challenging business and legal environment, a Yahoo spokesman said in a statement. Yahoo remains committed to the rights of our users and a free and open internet. We thank our users for their support. Access to many of Yahoo's features in China have disappeared since 2013, including email and news. In 2015, Yahoo closed its Beijing office and eliminated roughly 300 jobs. Yahoo joins Microsoft, LinkedIn social network, which announced last month it would leave China because of a significantly more challenging operating environment and greater compliance requirements in China. Operating in China has long posed numerous challenges for private companies, but Chinese President Xi Jinping has orchestrated a sweeping regulatory crackdown on the tech, education, gaming, and entertainment industries in recent months that has wiped a huge amount of market value off China's biggest firms. The country's latest five-year plan includes promises to strengthen rules that will clamp down on monopolistic behavior and regulate technological innovation. Authorities also called on law enforcement to take action in areas of vital interests of people, including financial services, education, and tutoring. Yahoo was once among the biggest tech companies in the world, but its influence drastically diminished over the past decade. Several CEOs tried turning the company around, but they ultimately failed to regain share of the search and advertising market that Yahoo once dominated. It was recently bought by Apollo Global Management from Verizon as part of a $5 billion deal. The company was once an early investor in Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba. Several years later, Yahoo returned $3 billion to shareholders after selling back about half of its massive stake in Alibaba for $7.1 billion. Will Microsoft force you to download Windows 11? Now that Windows 11 is out, some people are worried that they will be forced to pull the plug and update. Here's why you shouldn't worry about that. Windows 11's rollout is currently underway. After a period of beta testing through Microsoft's Insider Preview Program, Windows 11 is now rolling out to stable users worldwide. But the launch of Microsoft's new operating system has not been one without some concerns. Back when its predecessor, Windows 10, launched in 2015, Microsoft went with an unusually aggressive strategy to get Windows 10 up and running in people's computers. Some users are worried the company will now force users to download Windows 11. So will you be forced to upgrade to Windows 11? And how will the rollout work exactly? It's an in-place upgrade from Windows 10, and millions of computers worldwide are now running the latest versions of Windows. The way rollout will work, though, is probably much slower than you think, as Microsoft doesn't want everyone on Windows 11 immediately. It's a staged rollout, and it's usually the case with most Windows updates. However, this time it's very staged, to the point some people won't be getting their respective Windows 11 update through Windows Update until mid-2022. A lot of computers have not been offered an update to Windows 11 yet, being instead served by cumulative Windows 10 updates and patches. And a lot of computers will not be offered an update at all if they're not eligible for one. If you have an unsupported PC with a pre-2018 CPU with either AMD or Intel, or without TPM 2.0, then the good news, you won't even be offered the update in the first place. Microsoft has made Windows 11 requirements pretty steep. Will Microsoft force me to upgrade at some point? The short answer is no. What might make you upgrade instead, though, is not Microsoft. Rather, it's third-party software that might end up driving people to upgrade to Windows 11. Right now, all your programs fully support Windows 10, and some of them might even support Windows 10 better than they support Windows 11. But that will not be the case 3 years down the road. Windows 10 will become a out-of-date platform at one point, and developers will begin dropping support for it, meaning updates will cease coming out as they will favor Windows 11 instead. So, for now, don't worry. Microsoft is not going to force you to download Windows 11 if you don't want it. The Chromebook is now ready for prime time. Remote work at home and the virtual online classroom due to COVID-19 have been the catalysts for accelerated changes in technology. It has spawned rapid development in new computing tools. Today, the Chromebook has grown up to compete with a Windows-based PC. And with cloud computing, most applications running on the Windows operating system are becoming available. It is only when intensive processing is needed for audio, video, or digital photo editing that running local applications is more suited. How has the Chromebook evolved? For office functions, there is Google Docs. You can use Google Docs offline. Google Drive now lets you access and edit documents when not connected to the internet. There is also Microsoft Office on a Chromebook for Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, and OneDrive. You can file taxes with a Chromebook. Chromebook can file, prepare, and submit your tax paperwork electronically. You can now use TurboTax on a Chromebook. When it comes to applications on a Chromebook, though, you can't install the software. You also can't download the software online and then install it because Chrome OS doesn't support third-party programs. Parallel Desktop is a full-featured Windows container that runs natively on Chrome OS. This software allows you to run the full version of Windows, but there are a few important things to be aware of. The Parallels Desktop software is currently only available to business customers, making this option of little use to individual users at the present time. With Parallels Desktop for Chrome OS, IT departments can enable proprietary and full-featured Windows applications, including native Microsoft Office, on Chrome OS devices, online and offline. You will need a Chrome Enterprise upgrade to run Parallels. However, at the consumer level, there is Crossover. Crossover can run most Windows apps. With Crossover, you don't install Windows and then the apps. It's all about the app, and only the app. For example, Crossover doesn't run all Windows applications. Some run better than others, and some won't run at all. Chromebooks can run all Android apps. Nearly all Chromebooks launch in or after 2019 support Android apps and already have the Google Play Store enabled. There's nothing you need to do. However, there are models, new and old, that simply can't run Android apps due to hardware limitations. You can now print directly from the Chromebook. You can print from your Chromebook using most printers that connect to Wi-Fi or a wired network. Currently, Chromebook doesn't support Bluetooth printing. If you've been around Chromebooks for any amount of time, it's highly likely that you have fully reset your Chromebook back to factory status at least once. Whether it is when upgrading or handing off your Chromebook to someone else, or if you're having some sort of technical issue, resetting your Chromebook can alleviate many issues you may have, and it is a quick, easy process. If you are completely new to Chromebooks, however, there's something that needs to explain at this point in time. A factory reset on a Chromebook called a power wash is not your run-of-the-mill process if you're coming from the world of Windows, iOS, Android, or macOS. Instead, a power wash is a quick process that leaves you with a factory-fresh device within minutes, not hours. If you've reset a Windows device, you know the pain. A power wash is quite the opposite, and because of this relative ease and brevity, bringing the system back up to functional operation is a no-brainer. For most people, the Chromebook is more than adequate. When there is a problem, a quick factory reset lets the need to also reinstall applications a big plus. Because it is cloud-based, there is less hardware in the mix to support, and with the factory reset, apps and data are not affected. Well, why a Chromebook in the first place? Chromebooks are much simpler. They run Chrome OS and essentially a Chrome web browser vehicle and are often priced several hundred dollars less than a Windows PC. The newest Chromebooks contain a bonus, the ability to run some Android apps. Chromebooks look like traditional laptops. Chromebooks are good enough for many if you want to do basic processing with your laptop. Some of the key features that drive people to a Chromebook instead of a Windows or Mac computer is price. A Chromebook can power up and be ready to use in under 10 seconds and can get useful battery life for up to 13 hours. And the Chrome OS has built-in virus and malware protection that is always updated to the latest version, so you almost never need to worry about malicious files when using a Chromebook. Chromebook users can create supervised accounts to track or limit online activity for kids online. This makes the Chromebook a great family-friendly laptop. With a Chromebook, you get a decent amount of cloud storage for free. You get 100 gigabytes of Google Drive storage free for 2 years with all new Chromebooks. This is a huge amount of space. Comparable services from Dropbox, OneDrive, or Box will cost you an additional subscription. Chromebooks update themselves silently, automatically, and in the background, so your device is always up to date and works just the way you need it to. So, it all sounds good so far, right? Well, it does, but there is no such thing as a perfect device. What follows are some of the reasons think twice before purchasing Chromebooks. The Chromebook might not have the horsepower or application functionality for video and audio editing. However, if you need more control over your media or deal with a lot of high-definition footage, the Chromebook might not have the horsepower you need because there are no offline editors like iMovie, Premiere Elements, or Windows Movie Maker. Similarly, if you are a heavy user of Photoshop, Photoshop Elements, or other Adobe desktop software solutions, you will need to look for an equivalent online application. Things like Pixar or online Photoshop Express Editor are perfectly good for casual family photo editing, but they lack the fuller feature set from Adobe's Premiere Editing products. Adobe was working on an online version of Photoshop, but there is currently no timeline for when it might actually be available to consumers. There is no doubt about it. Windows is the most widely used desktop operating system in existence today. As such, you will find no shortage of apps and accessories to use with a Windows PC. A Chromebook, on the other hand, can be more limited in this regard. It has a growing library of software applications and can be used with an increasingly wide variety of accessories. But Windows machines still win in the battle for compatibility. The question should not be, what applications can I run with a specific budget, but what systems will support the applications you intend to use? Chromebooks are now ready for prime time. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with the IT Pro Series, Benjamin's past experience with employee monitoring.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. It's time to talk about tech and the workplace. Over the course of recent weeks, I've touched on a couple of different things. There was a news item in regards to the government spying on workers for their productivity levels and if they were actually doing work when they were supposed to be doing work. Now, this is also kind of a scare tactic, I think, but we'll talk about this for a moment. This is kind of a scare tactic in that there are certain items that are coming out in the news that are trying to encourage people to go back to work or encourage employers who want us to go back to work. There are also a lot of other articles that go in the other direction of saying how successful people are at home, working at home, free from the daily grind, being able to be a little bit more flexible, getting their commute time back and things like that. And there's a lot of ups and downs to us being in the workplace or being working at home. Yes, there are other scare stories. I remember a scare story that's come out in a few different locations in a few different avenues about people who are working two jobs, two full-time jobs during the same 8 hours a day. And they're engaging in meetings over on one screen and typing up stuff on another screen for a different employer, which gets into all kinds of inappropriate stuff. It gets into a creepy area, actually, because we do, well, I'll get into this in a few minutes. We do get paid by our employers to do a job. If we do something other than that, if we work for two employers at the same time, then in essence, we're actually not just stealing from one employer, we're actually stealing from two employers. Myself, being a radio show personality, Yes, there are many things that I could do at the same time, but I don't. And I consciously make an effort to make sure that I don't cross any barriers, any lines here or there, because I do not want there to be any inappropriate nature. And that's just how I live my life. But I went on to discuss in another item, I talked about metrics, and I talked about basic various different workers throughout the company where they are being monitored and measured upon their successes and failures, their number of widgets, their, you know, all of these different things, whatever a widget is. Now, a widget can be a soft item or it can be a hard item. It can be something that you are fashioning out of metal using hammers and pliers and whatever else, or it can be how much you type in, how much you pull it out, whether it's the amount of checks that you are cutting to various people who are owed money by your company, or the amount of checks you're taking in, whatever it is. And there's all kinds of different metrics that are involved throughout an entire company. Everybody's running reports, and your boss is running some reports, I'm sure, that have some impact on determining how effective of an employee that you are. But I wanted to go down one more road in this entire theme, and that is that there is an adage that we, you and I, work just hard enough to not get fired. And our employer pays us just enough so that we don't leave. And this is, yeah, it's a double-edged coin, or sword. It's a two-sided coin. It's, you know, we work hard enough to not get fired. They pay us just enough so we don't leave. All right. So I have a slightly tilted view of this ethic. I want to work to be the best person on the team. I want to model the right way to work, and I try my best. I want our team to also be a leading team. This is my quest. This is my goal. This is my journey, if you will. I worked for a large oil corporation, the largest independent oil drilling and exploration company in the world. They've since been purchased by another company. So I'll say their name. It was Unocal. You know, the big, huge 76 ball as you're driving along the highway. You've seen that iconic 76 ball. That was who I worked for. And I worked in IT for them. And we measured a variety of metrics. And I was always on top on those metrics. And I also worked to make sure – I wasn't just above middle. I wasn't going to be the person who was going to be next to last to being, you know, dismissed because of metrics. No, I was going to be there until they closed the door on our department. I had intended on being, and this is just part of my being, this is part of my lifestyle, I intended on being the person who would eventually turn out the lights when our department closed. And I was. Yes. Because my numbers were that good. And I live like this. And I want to challenge you to think about this. It's not good enough to be mediocre. It's not good enough to just work hard enough to not get fired. We all need to work a lot better. Because that's also how you're going to gain attention. That's how you're going to grow. That's how you're going to gain knowledge. And also, yes, that all elusive, illustrious wage raise. Yes, happened many times for me. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Cars are going electric, but what happens to the used batteries? General Motors car model Chevrolet Bolt that had once been celebrated as the United States' first truly mass market electric vehicle has begun to look more like a slow-motion disaster. Chevy Bolts were being recalled because of a series of rare but destructive fires sparked when drivers left their cars charging overnight. General Motors had traced the problem to flaws in the lithium-ion battery cells manufactured by South Korea's LG Chem. Now, the automaker was expanding the recall to all 141,000 boats sold worldwide since 2017. Fixing them would be a massive operation. The lithium-ion battery packed inside the boat runs the full wheelbase of the car and weighs 960 pounds. It contains hundreds of battery cells that are delicate and finicky. When taken apart for repairs, they can be dangerous, and incorrect handling can lead to noxious fumes and fires. GM did not have a plan for the batteries when they broke or died. Spire's new technologies turned that opening into a business that now handles the logistics of dead and dying electric vehicle batteries from every major car maker that sells in the United States, except Tesla. Spire's new technologies takes flawed batteries and transports, tests, and when possible, disassembles, fixes, and refurbishes them. When batteries can't be fixed or reused, the company recycles some at its on-site facility. It also stores batteries, lots of them. Spire's new technologies' main warehouse in Oklahoma City holds hundreds of electric car batteries stacked on shelves that jut out 30 feet into the air, and with the bolt recall, General Motors will send Spire's new technologies many more batteries. Those batteries and millions more like them that will eventually come off the road are a challenge to the world's electrified future. Automakers are pouring billions into electrification with the promise that this generation of cars will be cleaner than their gas-powered predecessors. By the end of the decade, the International Energy Agency estimates that there will be between 140 million and 230 million battery-powered vehicles on the road worldwide, accounting for up to 12% of the global automotive fleet. The last thing anyone wants is for these batteries to become waste. Lithium-ion batteries, like other electronics, are toxic and can cause destructive fires that spread quickly, a danger that runs especially high when they are stored together. A recent EPA report found that lithium-ion batteries caused at least 65 fires at municipal waste facilities last year, though most were ignited by smaller batteries, like those made for cell phones and laptops. In Spire New Technologies Warehouse, bright red emergency water lines snake across the ceilings, a safeguard against calamity. But seen another way, those old batteries are an opportunity for an even greener automotive future. Electric vehicles are more eco-friendly than their gas-burning counterparts, but they still come with environmental costs. Batteries contain valuable minerals like cobalt and lithium, which are primarily extracted and processed overseas, where they cost local communities dearly in labor abuses and vital resources like water, and contribute to global carbon emissions. Unchecked demand for new electric cars will reduce greenhouse gas emissions in developed countries and urban centers and sacrifice places where the materials are mined. In an ideal world, each of those lithium-ion batteries stacked in Oklahoma warehouse would be reused and recycled ad infinitum to create the lithium-ion batteries of 10, 25, and 50 years from now, even with little new material required. Experts call this a circular economy. To make it work, recyclers are racing to come up with an efficient and planet-friendly way to reduce a used battery to its most valuable parts and then remake them into something new. Entrants include Redwood Materials, a Nevada firm led by former Tesla executives, Europe's Northvolt, and Toronto's based LI Cycle. Others plan to squeeze every possible electron from a battery before it's recycled by offering second or third uses after it comes out of a car. In theory, materials could supply more than half of the cobalt, lithium, and nickel in new batteries by 2040, even as electric vehicles get more popular. The emerging electric vehicle industry needs a smart end-of-life process for batteries, alongside widespread charging stations, trained auto technicians, and a fortified power grid. It's essential infrastructure key to making our electrified future as green as possible. One thing appears certain. The current way of dealing with cars past their prime won't cut it. Cars are typically globetrotters, and the average vehicle may have 3 to 4 owners and cross international borders in its lifetime. When it finally dies, it falls into a global spanning network of auctioneers, dismantlers, and scrapyards that try to dispose of cars as profitably as possible. These vehicles go to auction, and anybody can grab them. That's where the Wild West is. Today's system mostly works because scrap metal has value and there's a healthy market for conventional auto parts. Dismantlers, including those that fly under the radar of regulators, make a fine art of wringing every penny from a dead car. That includes lead-acid batteries that start gas-powered cars. More than 95% of them are recycled today because consumers can claim deposits when they return the batteries, and they are relatively simple to dismantle. Lithium-ion batteries are, by contrast, heavy machines with dozens of components and radically different designs depending on their manufacturer. The voltages in these batteries are lethal. People don't know the risks involved. Extracting the valuable materials from an electric vehicle battery is difficult and expensive. The recycling process typically involves shredding batteries, then breaking them down further with heat or chemicals at dedicated facilities. That part is relatively simple. The harder part is getting dead batteries to those facilities from wherever they met their demise. About 40% of the overall cost of recycling, according to one study, is transportation. Electric vehicle battery packs are so massive they need to be shipped by truck, not airplane, in specially designed cases, often across vast distances to reach centralized recycling facilities. Handling lithium-ion batteries is so demanding that dealerships have chosen to ship an entire 4,000-pound damaged vehicle to Oklahoma City, just so Spire's new technology can extract and repair or recycle the 1,000-pound battery inside. In all, the journey is so labor and resource intensive that it generally exceeds the cost of digging up new materials from the ground. Currently, the only battery material that can be recycled profitably is cobalt, because it's just that rare and expensive. For the same reason, many battery makers hope to eliminate it from their chemistry soon, threatening to make the value proposition for recyclers even harder. Recycling is not going to be profitable for everybody. Even cobalt batteries are toxic and a fire danger, though they still contain plenty of valuable materials like lithium and nickel. But recycling them responsibly is simply less profitable. In short, in the early days of handling electronic waste, when producers and recyclers were caught on their haunches, you still saw a lot of tube TVs end up in ditches. There's less risk of that for electric vehicle battery packs, in part because they are so big and hard to hide. A landfill won't take them knowingly because of fire risk. A massive pack dumped somewhere is easier to trace back to an owner, or at least to its manufacturer. That will help keep most battery packs on the path to being recycled. Time will solve multiple problems, hopefully. As more batteries die, the economies of scale will drive down costs. Each key is locating battery makers and battery recyclers closer to each other. Most highly developed battery recycling industries are in China, where 70% of lithium-ion batteries are made. In North America and Europe, there's less manufacturing and less recycling, but some automakers have set up in-house recycling programs to recover materials themselves, while recyclers are also thinking about battery making. Redwood Materials said it would begin building battery cathodes from recovered metals. Still, others say some batteries will leak from these systems and not be recycled immediately. Some electric cars will end up abroad. Some 40% of gas-powered vehicles currently do. It's a common fate because cars deemed unfit for U.S. roads can still be shipped overseas and sold at a steep discount. A small number of older electric vehicles are already moving abroad. Sending used cars abroad is an important way of making electric vehicles accessible to poorer nations. But it raises the question of whether these places are prepared for safe and environmentally sound recycling when the vehicles die. There is evidence from the e-waste trade that there can be bad versions of recycling in places like India and Southeast Asia. Closer to home, other electric vehicle batteries may leak into shadowy corners of the domestic auto industry with players that don't have the money or desire to deal with waste. One result is stockpiling batteries in the hopes that recycling costs will eventually fall or that the value of the batteries will rise. Sometimes the batteries wind up with enthusiastic but not always safety-minded DIYers that can be useful because those DIYers are likely to squeeze more electrons out of used batteries by repurposing them for new applications, like at-home energy storage. But some battery packs are broken down into individual cells or modules for repurposing, which means they're more likely to go missing. Government will likely get involved, too, as it did with deposit system for lead-acid batteries. Last year, the European Union proposed regulations that would require battery and car manufacturers to handle recycled batteries, regardless of who owns them at the end of their lives. The dismantler can turn around and say, "I don't want this thing in my yard. Here, take it away." Honda or Tesla or Toyota. New standards in the European Union will also dictate how much of the precious metals inside the new batteries will need to be recycled from past devices rather than virgin material. Regulating the battery industry requires a careful balance. Strict rules aimed at maximizing the greenness of electric vehicles might slow down the adoption of electric cars and lead to burning more fossil fuels. A particular concern for automakers is a requirement with a high threshold of recycled materials to be included in new batteries. That could be difficult to achieve, especially in the near term, and could increase battery costs. In the United States, California Environmental Protection Agency has convened an advisory committee to consider potential rules for battery recycling. In recent meetings, automotive industry lobbyists have argued that whoever takes the battery out of a car at the end of its life should be responsible for ensuring that it makes it to a recycler, potentially aided by incentives. Automakers would serve as a backstop for the batteries that fall through the crack. In Oklahoma City, the batteries in the Spire's new technologies warehouse mostly came from cars that are still under warranty, which means the automakers are responsible for them. Automakers are paying Spire's new technologies to keep their old batteries because they don't know what the used battery market is going to look like and whether the materials inside the battery might be more valuable in the future. So instead of the automaker saying, "I'm going to go and dispose of those materials," they're saying, "I'm just going to hold on to it." Just an aside, with the increased use of electric cars, what happens when the collection of the gas tax drops dramatically because electric vehicles do not require gasoline to operate? They do not contribute to the upkeep of highways through a gas tax. How will we bring equity among drivers by ensuring all drivers pay for using roadways? Presenting Technology Chatter of Hits and Misses with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston. Miscellaneous products.
Marty Winston joins me now. Okay.
All veggie, right?
No mushrooms. I'm allergic to mushrooms.
Oh, no. Of course. While you're on the ground digging for vegetables, you might want to reach into the Klein Tools wearables that I got in for review.
Yeah.
Like these hinged knee pads. You spent a lot of time on your knees not having this thing pull away from your leg.
That is really good. Okay, so I have a bad left knee. I go through all kinds of problems whenever I'm trying to find these knee pads, and nothing ever seems to work. I haven't even thought about Klein tools. So these bend, and they adjust to hopefully people my size.
Now, yeah. You may notice in many parts of the country, it's still warm outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have two items here from Klein, the cooling headband.
Uh-huh, nice, okay.
Got the kind of fiber where you wet it, put it on your head, and you're going to keep your cool. Also, the same thing in a cooling towel.
All right. So
these two are about a way to beat the heat without getting beat up yourself.
Yeah, so headband and towel. So the idea with the towel is probably for putting it around your neck, and it's keeping it kind of that evaporation effect going for you.
Yeah, the forehead gets most of what the brain pan's doing, and around that neck and shoulders is a place that always hurts more when you get home.
Yeah.
I also have their P100 half-mask respirator. Now, this thing is more about dust than about disease.
Yeah, you know, if somebody showed up in public wearing something like that, I'd be concerned. Everybody else seems to want to wear just like a bandana, looking like the old-fashioned bank robber from the Wild West.
I don't know if we like being called old-fashioned necessarily.
Were you a bank robber, a train robber in the Wild West?
Well, I'm the guy who put bit into Bitcoin. In fact, I tried putting in 2 bits, but that was just a quarter. And now we know that 8 bitcoins, 8 bits, that's got to be a dollar, right? If 2 bits is a quarter, 8 bits is a dollar.
There you go.
And that should devalue every Bitcoin out there. Thank you very much, and you're welcome.
So what do you have here in your hand now?
It's got a HEPA filter within it. I think you can see, not you guys at home, but the pleating on the filter, little thing up front that handles the valving for inhale versus exhale. And it's just... it's a universal fit. It's way cool, and it's love if you'd rather not be coughing all the time.
Yeah, you know, we did some ceiling scraping at my old home, and there was a ton of dust because we were doing this all on our own. We were it was a mess. Yes, cough inducing. Yeah. So what is this guy here?
This looks like a safari cap. It's a Klein hard hat with a brim all the way around, and it's not in the box because I took it to work.
Okay.
If you want anything to fall on you, this isn't the thing. And it fits one of the Klein headband headlights.
Nice. Which
has multiple brightness and works for hours, and I don't know about you, but I use that headlight, not necessarily the hard hat, just to make sure I can get the garbage all the way out to the curb.
that's really Klein Tools is into a lot of these different wearables. I really had no idea.
No idea is where our whole segments always start.
So what is Klein Tools?
I'm going to give you one more.
Okay.
Come on.
All right.
I don't run out early. Let's see if we can dazzle you with this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we just blew out the camera there. I got blue spots all in my eye now. So it's
their waterproof pocket flashlight, and it's really short and slender. I mean, it's not super short. You don't hide it in a glove finger necessarily, but it's modestly short. It's shorter than many pen lights. It's like AAA size, but it's rechargeable.
Oh, nice. So, okay, yeah.
It's one of those things. Do we have 275 lumens in high mode? And it can survive a 6-foot bounce off the ground.
Nice. I like that. That is a bright idea.
Oh, help! Call the pun police. like they wouldn't have booked me long ago.
Yeah, really.
time for one more?
Yes, we've got about 45 seconds.
And here it is, Klein Bluetooth speaker for the job site.
Okay, not really a wearable, but yeah, you know, it's something that I would carry along. It's the right size to fit in a large pocket. And, you know, these days we do, anytime you're working on something, you do want a speaker. This is a nice size, and I'm sure it's got great sound to it too.
Can't argue. I mean, if Klein didn't work for workers, they'd be buying somebody else. And if you go into any of the hardware stores, Klein is at least two different shelf positions. So you know people are loving it.
Yeah, definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements of computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. The 46th Annual Trenton Computer Festival, TCF 2022, is set for Saturday, March the 19th, the next year, 2022. The theme of the festival is Disrupting Climate Change with Technology. It will be held at the College of New Jersey in Trenton, New Jersey. The keynote speaker is Bob Kopp, and he is the co-director of the University Office of Climate Action. He is a climate and sea-level scientist and climate policy scholar at Rutgers University's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences and Rutgers Institute of Earth and Ocean and Atmospheric Sciences. TCF will be a full day of learning and fun. For more information, you can go to tcf-nj.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club has a meeting Thursday, November the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and the topic of presentation is Cryptography Basics. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, nyacc.org for meeting ID. Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, November the 12th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And to get the meeting ID, it's limac.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets the last Thursday of each month, and it happens to be Thanksgiving this month, so there's no meeting this month. But if you want more information about the club, their website is bcug.com. Westchester PC Users Group meets Thursday, December the 2nd. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and their website is wpcug.org for meeting ID. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey has a meeting on Friday, December the 3rd. Meeting time is 8 p.m., online virtual meeting via Jitsi. The website is acgnj.org for more information on meeting ID. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.